When does a phenomenon become the unknown? When all attempts at understanding fail, and those who thirst for knowledge and understanding watch as research turns to ash in their mouth. As the phenomenon turns from a riddle to be solved into anomalous fascination.
Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning in to episode 24 of the Anomalous Fascination Podcast. Hope you've been enjoying this show, and I'm always thrilled to have any engagement on social media. Please always feel free to message me at AnomalyPod on Facebook or Twitter with any comments or questions you might have. And more importantly, for questions and comments for an upcoming episode. I'll be hosting an episode where I, Andy Clodfelter, the non-narrating human being, will answer questions or read comments about past episodes, future ideas, or the show as a whole. So please, if you're listening between the dates of May 19th and May 31st, 2021, please send those questions in, along with whether it's okay to read your name on the air. And as always, if you love the show and want to show your support, tell a friend about it. It helps a lot. And now, on with the episode. What are some of your greatest fears? I'll wait. For many of you, I'm sure it's something more personal. A fear of not accomplishing something, fear for your children or a family member, a fear of failure. Others may have said more situational fears, fear of heights, fear of spiders, fear of drowning, or even the dreaded fear of public speaking. Regardless of the fear, it's there. And it's a very personal experience. And no matter how small or unimpressive it may sound to others, it doesn't matter. It brings you to your knees. And that's what counts. But zooming out a bit, there are bigger fears. World fears, if you will. Fear of tyranny, fear of a collapsing economy, fear of famine, terrorism, or even war. Fears that affect your neighbors, friends, strangers. The world can be a scary place if you focus in on it too long. People have enough to worry about in their day-to-day lives without even considering the more macro problems of the Earth. But when the day comes and the big problems of the world show up at your doorstep, suddenly your fears can, well, feel pretty small. There's an element of almost taking ourselves too seriously at times. When we forget the reality of the world we live in, and honestly, sometimes, that's a good thing. It's comforting to stay focused on what's in front of us. But what about those big problems that we talked about? Are they ever shrunk down to feel small or insignificant? I mean, how could they? They can infect entire countries, continents, species. That's true. Until we pan out just a bit further. Up into the air, outside the atmosphere of Earth, and looking down over our solar system. Suddenly, watching a gravity-bound ball of carbons, hydrogens, and oxygens flying through an endless abyss towards an unfathomably large mass of burning hydrogen and helium can make someone a bit nervous, huh? By this time, though, the solar cycle has happened so many times without fail, we just take for granted that no matter how insane it is, it works. It's not like our solar system ever has hiccups, right? Right? Let's take a stroll, shall we? It's the year 1859 on planet Earth. Late August of 1859, to be exact. When August 28th, 1859 rolled around, and a man by the name of Richard Carrington, among others, had begun to notice a large quantity of sunspots appearing on the sun. Sunspots, for those unfamiliar, are more than just skin blemishes caused by the sun. They're also a solar phenomena. Basically, a sunspot is a large darkened area of the sun's surface caused by reduced temperatures. This variation in temperature is usually related to some sort of change or flux in the magnetic field. And sunspots typically only last a few days to a month. So needless to say, Carrington, a wealthy amateur astronomer, was very enthusiastic to investigate further. The sun was currently approaching the solar maximum, which is the end of a solar cycle. Solar cycles can typically run around 11 years, and the maximum is when the frequency of sunspots increases and the sun's magnetic fields are the most irregular. So Carrington knew the maximum was likely approaching and was excited to learn more about the sunspots. Because with an event that only occurs every 9 to 14 years, you gotta get your money's worth while you can. So he set to work in what would be several days of investigation, sketches, and research. The following day, August 29th, an event occurred that was rather unusual, but not unheard of. The Aurora Borealis had suddenly become easily visible as far south as New England, and the Aurora Australis was easily visible as far north as Queensland, Australia. Additionally, some telegraph operators had reported some minor malfunctions with their equipment, but it was nothing too serious at the time. Now at this time, Carrington, along with the rest of the world, made zero connection between the sunspots and the auroras. I mean, why would they? We knew that auroras were a form of magnetism and some minor disturbances could be felt at times, but that was about it. So basically, though very interesting, Carrington was still locked in, focused on these sunspots. And as fate would have it, that would be rather fortuitous. Because a couple of days later, on September 1st, 1859, around noon, Carrington was looking through his telescope, observing the sunspots, when something happened. Now, I don't know about you, but whether I'm an astronomer or not, when I'm watching the sun, I do not like the idea of anything suddenly happening. But regardless, as Carrington watched, suddenly, from one of the sunspots, burst a brilliant white light flare, erupting outward from the sun. Carrington, knowing something like this had never been witnessed before, excitedly watched for 5 minutes as he tracked the movement of what essentially was a giant, colossal fireball. When after 5 minutes the fireball passed from view, Carrington was elated. He had just been the first person to witness a solar flare. And with the naked eye, no less. His enthusiasm in that moment could only be surpassed by the terror that was about to envelop the Earth. What Carrington didn't know at the time was that the massive solar flare he had just witnessed, holding the energy of 10 billion atomic bombs, had just sent billions and billions of tons of magnetically charged plasma and gas hurtling towards Earth at unfathomable speed. Also known as a CME, a coronal mass ejection, these expulsions typically take many days to travel from Sun to Earth. This particular CME took only 17.6 hours to travel 93 million miles, or 150 million kilometers. It truly was a perfect storm. Solar storm, literally. As not only was this flare and subsequent ejection one of the largest on record, but only days before, on the 29th, a smaller but still sizable CME had ripped through the solar winds towards Earth, leaving far less resistance than usual. And yes, I'm getting pretty deep in the weeds with the terminology, I know. So let me dumb it down a bit. Basically, one explosion cracked open the door from the Sun to the Earth. And a few days later, a bigger explosion blew the door off its hinges while it was still partly open. When this coronal mass ejection hit the Earth, it was like the Earth had been struck by lightning. Don't worry, it didn't fry us all. You probably would have read about this in history class otherwise. But the resulting aurora lit up the night sky in such a way that it was like standing in broad daylight at 10 p.m. Across the world, people reported birds chirping and singing as if the sunrise had come. Workers who were still tired from the previous day's hard work awoke and set off to get dressed for the day, thinking it was morning. And all the while, fear gripped millions. Was this it? Was this the end? Listen, it's 2021. Something like this happens, and I'm pretty sure the world would still respond this way. Whether religious or not, it's hard to deny that witnessing the equivalent of a super-powered fluorescent light filling the night sky would give someone pause. But time passed, the auroras faded, and the world still stood. The aurora borealis had been visible almost to the equator, as the world witnessed what still has to have been one of the most incredible but terrifying visual displays in human history. The Earth's atmosphere is truly remarkable. It protects Earth from perils that would have destroyed us millions of times over were it not there. But it isn't perfect. You see, electricity can still have its day. And such was the case with this. As the electromagnetic pulse that struck the Earth shook hands with the newly constructed Victorian Internet, aka the U.S. telegraph system, and it was fried in seconds. Telegraphers reported being shocked as electricity leapt from the equipment. Nearby papers began catching on fire. The telegraph poles emitted showers of sparks. Basically, history's biggest EMP just detonated around Earth and crippled its electrical systems. Now the good news? It is 1859. So crippling its electrical systems isn't exactly devastating. Now, to some listening, it might even sound odd to be hearing about electricity at all during the late 1850s. But this wasn't electricity as we know it now. Although most equate first harnessing electricity with Thomas Edison's 1879 creation of the electric light bulb, electricity itself was being produced by both dynamos and voltaic batteries before this. Voltaic batteries being a series of zinc and copper discs separated by an electrolyte to produce a current, and the dynamo, a copper disc that rotates between the poles of a magnet, to generate electricity. So with the introduction of the telegraph, this became one of the first big opportunities to use these inventions with regularity. So why do I tell you all this information about electricity, besides it just being interesting? Well, because the day after the September 1st Carrington event, many telegraphs that had not been destroyed were running without batteries. Yes, you heard right. Numerous reports were made that telegraph machines that had been disconnected from either their voltaic batteries or dynamos were able to send telegraphs for a good amount of time on September 2nd, utilizing nothing but the remnants of the solar flare's residual electromagnetism. Wild. Needless to say, when it was all said and done, our friend Richard Carrington connected some dots, realizing, okay, so the sun did that. This was how the scientific community began to realize that auroras and much of the electromagnetic events in the atmosphere can be tied to and monitored by the sun's activities. So, what have we learned from all of this? Let's take a quick break and come back to wrap up this story.
This is Wine, Dine, and Storytime. I'm Nydia.
I'm Dana.
I'm Cindy, and we're your hosts.
Have you ruined a family gathering by asking what wine pairs well with eating a husband?
Are you the CEO of TMI?
Have you ever been kicked under the table because you brought up your favorite dinner topic, atrocities throughout history?
Then this podcast is perfect for you.
Each week, Dana and I share stories based on topics that include true crime, historical shenanigans, unexplained mysteries, and all things fascinating, while our amateur chef, Cindy, prepares themed dinners and pairs wines based on those topics.
Find us, the Wine, Dine, and Storytime podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a follow.
So, what's the big deal? Why the whole thing about fear at the beginning of the episode? Well, because as discussed during this episode, this event happened in 1859. Late enough in history to document it, but early enough in history to avoid most of the nasty side effects. It is estimated that if a Carrington-level event were to happen today, it would result in several trillion dollars of damage. To be honest, I can't even fathom the aftermath of such an event. Planes, automobiles, trains, medical facilities, the internet, defense systems. Everything. Gone in a flash. It would be impossible to calculate now just how many lives would be lost in accidents, hospitals, etc., were an event of this caliber to hit. So for warring countries, political systems, the economy, it would all feel like small stuff for a bit, huh? Being a marble flying through an infinite void can feel pretty daunting at times. But Earth's got our backs. Besides, a Carrington-level event has to be like one in a million, right? Well, not quite. Because in 2012, a Carrington-level event showed up. July 23rd, 2012, once again, an explosion of unfathomable proportions flung billions of tons of magnetically charged plasma and gas hurtling through space at insane speeds. And the planet Earth dodged a direct impact by 9 days. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Anomalous Fascination. If you'd like to keep in touch with the show, you can find me at AnomalyPod on Facebook and Twitter, or email me at AnomalousFascination@gmail.com. And if you love the show, hop on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser and leave the show a nice 5-star rating and review. Or even just tell a friend about it. And until next time, thanks for listening.